This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo joined his Treasury counterpart Steve Mnuchin Monday in announcing the restoration of sanctions targeting Iran's oil, banking, and transport sectors.
Our objective is to starve the Iranian regime of the revenue it uses to fund violent and destabilizing activities throughout the Middle East and indeed around the world.
After pulling out of the international nuclear agreement with Tehran in May, the Trump administration is targeting Iran's main sources of revenue to curb its nuclear missile ambitions and activities in the Middle East. White House National Security Advisor John Bolton, appearing on Fox Business News, said the action involves old and new sanctions.
We're going to have sanctions that even go beyond this. We're not simply going to be content with the level of sanctions that existed under Obama in 2015. More are coming, and even more important, perhaps, is we are actually going to have very strict, very tight enforcement.
Iran's President Hassan Rouhani accused the U.S. of targeting ordinary Iranians with an economic war. Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif said the U.S. has had many demands designed to curb Iran's nuclear program but failed to achieve them. He told Parliament U.S. bullying is backfiring, making it more isolated. In Cameroon, gunmen kidnapped nearly 80 children from a school in the west. A local pastor blamed separatist militants. Lalo Lafrique Deben Chofo Adolphe is the Northwest Regional Governor.
Despite what happens here, the state government will not surrender. We are going to make sure the students, the people that were abducted, are brought back to the classrooms.
The abduction occurred before dawn Monday in the city of Bamenda in the English-speaking Northwest. The army has begun searching the area. Anglophone separatists are demanding their own country, accusing the French-speaking majority of discrimination. This is VOA News. U.S. voters head to the polls Tuesday for a national non-presidential election, widely seen as a referendum on the 2 years of Donald Trump's presidency. Mr. Trump has been crisscrossing the country in recent days, holding campaign rallies for Republican candidates for Senate, the House of Representatives, and statewide offices. One of his stops Monday was in Cleveland, Ohio, to rally supporters.
Tuesday is your chance to send a message to the Democrat mob and to everyone who has made it their mission to denigrate our movement and to divide our great nation. It's not going to happen.
Former President Barack Obama campaigned Monday for candidates in Virginia.
You're going out there, you're going to make sure that people vote to start making things better. And when you do that, then the spirit of America is going to shine.
A University of Florida professor expects 40 million Americans to have cast ballots early or to do so Tuesday, a 45% turnout that would represent the highest turnout for such an election in 50 years. President Trump took time between campaign rallies to answer reporters' questions and revealed he may not meet with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, on the sidelines of centenary events surrounding the end of World War I in Paris this weekend.
Getting along with Russia, China, and all of them would be a good thing. I've said it for a long time. So we'll have plenty of meetings, but I'm not sure that we'll have a meeting in Paris. Probably not.
Mr. Trump did hold out the prospect of meeting Mr. Putin on the sidelines of the G20 summit later this month in Argentina. The two leaders last met earlier this year in Helsinki amid allegations of Russian meddling in the 2016 election. Russia and China have abstained from a UN Security Council resolution that would allow it to slap sanctions on perpetrators of rape and sexual violence in Libya. The document was adopted on a vote of 13-0. It expands the criteria for applying sanctions to include gender-based violence allegedly carried out by militia, criminal gangs, and human smugglers. Thousands of migrants from Central America are resting at a sports stadium in Mexico City more than 2 weeks after setting out from Honduras to head to the U.S. border. Thousands more are expected by Wednesday. Meanwhile, nearly 5,000 U.S. soldiers are at the southern border to bolster Border Patrol and the National Guard to confront illegal migrants as they arrive at the border. China's President Xi Jinping has pledged to widen access to his country's economy to, in his words, foster a world-class business environment. He said efforts are underway to stimulate imports, lower tariffs, ease customs clearances, and punish intellectual property theft. Powered by gains in financial, energy, and defense sectors, U.S. stocks rallied Monday on election eve with the benchmark Dow Jones adding nearly 200 points to close at 25,461. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News. We'll be right back.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Cameroon separatists are claiming their forces have rescued about 80 abducted students.
The latest we have now is our restoration forces stormed the vicinity where the children were being kept, and they were able to free them.
Chris Anu is Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement of Cameroon. Meanwhile, the Cameroon government is vowing to find and rescue the students. A South Sudan rebel spokesman released last week says he was never tortured in prison. And an international conference calling for a war crimes court in Liberia kicks off this Thursday in the capital, Monrovia.
We are obligated as a country under human rights standing to be able to address gross human rights violations. Until we address the past human rights violations, the current human rights situation in Liberia remains challenging.
Adama Dempster, Secretary General of the Civil Society Human Rights Advocacy Platform of Liberia. A new opinion poll shows that next year's Malawi presidential election is too close to call. And we'll examine one of the factors in today's midterm elections here in the United States. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Cameroon's government said its military and intelligence services are working hard to rescue 80 kidnapped students and their principal. The children were abducted from a Presbyterian secondary school in the restive English-speaking region of the country. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Bamenda, Cameroon.
Good morning, young man.
Good morning.
Yeah.
My name is Walking Bernard.
Talk louder.
My name is Walking Bernard. My father's name is Nguye John. My mother's name is Nguye.
This is the voice of a man in a social media video identifying himself as the leader of the armed group that kidnapped students. He is telling some of them they can return to school only when his fighters have achieved their dream of having independence. In the video, the students look frightened in a dark room constructed with locally made bricks. The kidnappers tell the children to give their names and the names and locations of their parents. One of them is heard saying that he has no father. 16-year-old student Eric Alum says the gunmen arrived early Monday, seized the students and left with no one intervening.
They knocked our door, so we thought that maybe it was our classmate from the other dormitory. So somebody went and opened the door. As we opened the door now, the person opened the door, they pointed a gun on her head. So she shouted, Jesus. As she shouted, Jesus, now the boys entered inside the dormitory. At that time, there were eight of them that entered the dormitory. So all of us went under our beds.
School discipline mistress Maureen J says the attackers took students and teachers at gunpoint.
They have taken students from different dormitories, both boys and girls.
Northwest Region Governor Deben Chofo visited the school and said the military is doing everything possible to bring the children home safely.
The state government will not surrender. We are going to make sure the students, the people that were abducted, are brought back to the classrooms. Measures are being taken by the security men in that regard.
In September, separatists abducted six students from the Presbyterian School of Science and Technology in Bafut near Bamenda and later freed them after their families paid ransom. Most schools in Cameroon's restive northwest and southwest have been closed since 2016 because of separatist attacks. In August, separatists said they would allow the schools to reopen, but without a security guarantee and at a date of their choosing. Conflicts began in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon in 2016 when teachers and lawyers complained of discrimination from the French-speaking majority in education and the justice system. The government responded with a crackdown and separatists responded with violence. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Bamenda, Northwestern Cameroon.
A spokesman for the self-proclaimed Ambazonia separatist movement says their forces have rescued about 80 students abducted from a Presbyterian secondary school in Cameroon's English-speaking region. Chris Anu, Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed Independent Ambazonia, says the students could be turned over to their parents as early as today, Tuesday. Cameroon Information Minister Issa Chiroma Bakari told VOA late Monday night that he had no knowledge about the release of the students. Chris Anu denies the separatists kidnapped the children. He says the children were abducted by what he called French Cameroon Army to blame it on the separatists.
The latest we have now is our restoration forces stormed the vicinity where the children were being kept, and they were able to free them. And so right now, they are still in our custody. We're trying to find out, interview them to know what happened.
So, Chris, you say our restoration forces, who kidnapped or who abducted the children? Your forces?
No, our forces did not abduct the children. What we are finding out is that French Cameroon soldiers disguised as our restoration forces, I mean, one of them actually put on some fake mustache to look like one of our boys, and they abducted the children. Now, you have to understand, they picked up altogether 90 people, students, including some of their teachers. Of course, you don't need to be told that our boys do not have the capacity or capability to abduct 90 people. We have actually gotten intelligence that the soldier who was captured in that video is from the center region, and it's a soldier in the French Cameroon Army.
How did you know that the person in that video interrogating the children is a member of the, what you call, French Cameroon Army?
He has been identified, and the name is actually identified as we speak. If you listen to his accent, he speaks like somebody who is a predominantly French speaker. Because we use pidgin language. Most of our restoration boys, they use pidgin. But if you listen to his pronunciation, he cannot even pronounce the word Ambazonia. So we realize he isn't one of us from the Southern Cameroon. He is a French Cameroon army agent sent to pick up those students so that they can turn around and say, Ambazonian restoration forces, they are terrorists, and they are now kidnapping children.
The latest story we have is that the government says its military intelligence services are working to rescue the 80 kidnapped students and their principal. The government is blaming it on your movement.
Well, the government of French Cameroon is always selling after the market. Remember, we had no reason to kidnap students or their teachers and principals. At the beginning of the school season, we made it very clear that we have no problem with school resumption as far as there was security. Why would we then go around and pick them up?
If you say that your forces have released these children, when do you think the people of Cameroon or the people of Ambazonia or the parents of those children can see their children? The world will be watching you to put them on display.
Absolutely. If they have not yet been sent to their respective homes, I believe that will be done probably early tomorrow. The only reason we kept them for a while, the share number is great, and we needed to interview them to know their story, know how this incident took place.
Chris, thank you very much again. We look forward to maybe as the day break on Tuesday to seeing these children, if in fact they have been released.
Absolutely. You will see them tomorrow.
Chris Anu, Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement of Cameroon. You're speaking with me from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 6th. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. A South Sudan rebel spokesman released from prison last week by President Salva Kiir says he was never tortured in prison. James Gardette Dark, former spokesman of SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar, says the most difficult part of his imprisonment was losing his freedom and not being able to see his family. Now, Gardette Dag tells John Tanzel View South Sudan in Focus program that he's happy to get his freedom back.
I think, you know, how happy a person would be if he has gained his freedom after 2 years. And this is what I feel right now, that I'm praying that I can walk around, that I can also talk to my friends.
How about your family? You have not been together with them for quite a long time.
We've been talking on the phone. And this is one of the things I said, my priority is to see my family and my friends.
I know it's not easy to look back, but most people who are our listeners would want to hear about how you were arrested and brought to Juba. What happened to you during your time in detention?
Well, I was arrested on the 2nd of November in my house in Nairobi. Not all that I was being arrested at the time, but I was taken that I was going to meet somebody. And then I ended up in Juba. And once I arrived in Juba, then I was charged in the case of the nature of my job in the opposition. That's how I came to be in detention and then taken to court.
Talk to us a little bit about your life at the Blue House. We understand you were a guest there for some time.
Yeah, you know, when you are in detention, you don't have freedom to move, and you comply with what you are told to do. And this is exactly what happened at the Blue House. I had to comply with what I was told to do as a person under detention. So placed in a cell where I would be paraded in the morning with the rest of my colleagues who were there. Actually, I was not tortured physically. But as I said, there was no freedom to move. It took time for me to see my relatives, to visit my friends and relatives. But gradually, I was allowed to see relatives.
While you were in prison, some of your party members were busy sending messages out there that you have been tortured, you are blind, somehow even saying that you were almost killed. Now you're telling us here that you have not been tortured. Where were these stories coming from?
I was under detention. I did not have access to the media, so I do not know how these stories came about. But as I'm telling you, it was not torture. I was just put under detention, and some of my freedoms were removed, were taken away, such as accessing my relatives and friends. But there was no torture.
And so what is your next plan? I mean, the president pardoned you, and you are now a free man. What is next? Are you going back to join your colleagues?
Well, first I want to see my family, where they are now, and after seeing them for a while during this three-year period, then I may decide to come back and maybe rejoin politics. But as for now, I want to go and see my family.
That was James Gadet Dak, spokesman for South Sudan rebel leader Riek Machar. He was speaking with John Tanza of VOA's South Sudan in Focus program. A new opinion poll shows that next year's Malawi presidential election is too close to call. The ruling Democratic Progressive Party, DPP, led in the survey with 33%, followed by the Malawi Congress Party, MCP, with 31%, while the United Transformation Movement, UTM, came in third with 17%, according to the poll, which was conducted by the Institute of Public Opinion Research. The survey also showed the main opposition MCP party losing ground to the yet-to-be officially registered UTM party of Vice President Solos Chilima. Vincent Kondwe is a governance consultant and member of the Political Science Association of Malawi.
The results which are coming from the poll, to a larger extent, are quite indications of what is happening on the ground. Because when you look over the last 6 months, the main opposition party, the Malawi Congress Party, it looks like they've been sleeping on duty and have not been able to rise to the expectations that Malawians have of what an alternative government in waiting is supposed to be doing. So they've been caught off guard as the main opposition party.
Why do you think Malawi Congress Party appears not to be gaining momentum as most people have predicted, and Salos Chilima with his newly yet to be registered UTM appear to be having a lot of momentum ahead of next year's election?
There have been quite a number of corruption scandals, and the Malawi Congress Party as the main opposition political party has not been able to rise to the occasion and demand forceful accountability from the ruling Democratic Progressive Party. Secondly, there was a very important bill which was brought to Parliament, the Electoral Reform Bill, which many people believed that it would have made elections to be substantially a very good translation of the will of the people. But it seems that the Malawi Congress Party, as the main opposition, connived with the ruling Democratic Progressive Party to shoot down the Electoral Reforms Bill. So it seems that these people, and coupled with the inactivity of the political party, have made Malawians to start searching for an alternative.
Let me ask you about former President Joyce Banda. She came with a lot of publicity when she returned to Malawi from the U.S. in a self-imposed exile. She met with some minor political parties with the aim of forming an alliance ahead of the election. Why is she not featuring prominently in this poll as a significant force ahead of next year's vote?
Joyce Banda's political career is over. Her disappearance from Malawi soon after the 2014 elections meant that the party that she was heading had no direction. Over a long period of time, there was a leadership vacuum within our People's Party, and the supporters who had been rallying behind her unexpectedly had no leader to look up to. So the supporters who were following her had decided to look start searching for alternative political parties or political movements that they could be able to follow.
Vincent Conway is a governance consultant and a member of the Political Science Association of Malawi. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from Lilongwe, an international conference to explore the establishment of a war crimes court in Liberia kicks off this Thursday in Liberia's capital, Monrovia. The conference will bring together experts, human rights defenders, and civil society actors to identify strategies to support civil society organizations working on accountability for war crimes in Liberia. Liberia's Truth and Reconciliation Commission made over 200 recommendations, including prosecution of individuals found responsible for various kinds of gross human rights violation and war crimes. But former President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's government and now the George Weah government have been hesitant in setting up the court for fear it might spark yet another conflict. Adama Dempster is Secretary General of the Civil Society Human Rights Advocacy Platform of Liberia.
The civil society community, the human rights community in Liberia, working in collaboration with a number of international human rights groups, thought it otherwise to host a national conference of this kind that will be able to help us draft a strategy that will be a platform where we can push for justice in Liberia for past crime. As you may be aware, Liberia remains a country struggling with a legacy of serious human rights violations, atrocities, crimes committed over the course of two back-to-back civil wars in Liberia. These are gross violations of must be addressed, and accountability should be established at the end of the day in Liberia.
Mr. Dempster, do you think there is an appetite for the establishment of a war crimes court in Liberia? Because, you know, some people might argue that, listen, the country has gone past this war and we need to move forward.
There is an appetite. We are obligated as a country on the human rights standing to be able to address gross human rights violations. I will tell you squarely that until we address the past human rights violation, the current human rights situation in Liberia remains challenging. So there is an appetite. We have a huge victim community. People who became victimized as a result of the civil conflict have not had the opportunity to have a redress. There had not been any reparation for any victim within this country. And most of the victims still live with medical complications. And we think at the expense of these victims, those who are accused for committing these horrific crimes are the more powerful people in our society today. That is not a balanced situation for Liberia. So indeed, we are saying that to be able to get Liberia on the right trajectory, the issue of impunity must come to an end. And there should be a deterrent so that past crime cannot continue to occur in Liberia, so that even in future time, we cannot go back or slip into conflict.
I asked the question about the appetite because I think some time ago, the foreign minister or someone in the Liberian government currently suggested perhaps that the call for the establishment of a war crimes court should be put to a referendum.
Yeah, you will find out that he is not the only person in government that have come to speak to the issue in that context. But what is important is that they need to know Liberia's human rights obligation. And the issues we are talking about, they are international human rights violations. That is not something that you need to go to referendum for. These are international crimes. They have no statute of limitation. So again, it is a learning point where most of our ministers, our government officials need to understand the human rights sensitivities before they even respond or talk about these issues.
Mr. Dempster, thank you very much for speaking with us. We shall check with you again before or after the conference. Thank you very much.
You are most welcome. Thank you.
Adama Dempster, Secretary General of the Civil Society Human Rights Advocacy Platform of Liberia. You're speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Americans are voting today, Tuesday, in a midterm election to determine which political party will control the U.S. Congress for the next 2 years. VOA National Correspondent Jim Malone reports that despite the many issues dividing Americans, Democrats and Republicans do seem to agree that the central issue in this election is President Donald Trump.
For President Donald Trump, this year's midterm elections are personal.
All of this extraordinary progress is at stake. It is at stake. I'm not on the ballot, but in a certain way, I'm on the ballot, so please go out and vote. Go out and vote.
But as much as Trump motivates his core supporters, he also energizes critics like Jenny Hines.
There's an active resistance to this president who is operating as if he is above the law.
And does anybody have any questions?
Trump is the central figure in this year's election, says American University analyst David Barker.
Yes, Democrats from, you know, the day after the election in 2016 have been waiting for this day, and it's all about Trump. Trump fully embraces that. He wants it to be all about him.
Kanye's been a friend of mine for a long time.
Trump has accelerated a trend to nationalize congressional elections, says Laura Brown.
It really is now all national, and everyone is kind of looking at this as either a referendum for or against the president and his party.
For Trump and his base, it makes sense, says former Trump strategist Steve Bannon.
I think if you make this a national referendum and nationalize this election on the success of President Trump's program, it's a clear winner. And I think the Democrats get crushed.
But others are skeptical, including former Republican National Chairman Michael Steele.
All right, fine. You want it to be about you? Well, every candidate on the ballot now has to account for your behavior, has to account for your tweets.
Get out and vote. Thank you.
Trump is likely to generate higher Democratic turnout, says Maryland Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger.
When all you do is care about yourself and not about people, and not about people, what they need, not about your seniors needing medical care, and you just want to look good and knock them out, which is happening. This is hurting, and this is why I think a lot of people will come out.
We are going to fight, and we are going to win.
But the president does not seem to be worried, preferring instead to rally his own supporters, says Gallup pollster Frank Newport.
He's kind of given up on attempting to broaden his appeal, it looks like. It fits more with his style. He has a very, as we all know, a very combative style. He likes to have enemies because that gives him somebody to fight against. So
that was VOA National Correspondent Jim Malone reporting. And that is it for this Tuesday, November 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jamie Cook, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Americans vote in the U.S. midterm elections on November 6th. We'll examine what the results mean for America's domestic and foreign policy, particularly as they relate to Africa and Africans, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.